Welcome to Shattering Myths Radio. This is James and Patty once again sitting in for Yada, who is spending some time with his family on a nice little vacation. So he asked us to sit in and do a couple of shows on the Mikra, the upcoming Mikra, which will be next month. And we plan on doing a show on each, and that's not exactly worked out. This is our third show, and we're still only about a third, maybe a little over a third of the way through the material we've prepared for Pesach. But thankfully, the Mikra are so interconnected that even though we're reading directly and studying mostly on Pesach, we've discussed a lot about matzah as well, which is important because matzah and Pesach are all very interconnected, and both, you know, one to get without the other is counterproductive. So we're going to continue where we left off yesterday, which was discussing the instructions found for Pesach in Exodus chapter 12. And Patty, if you wouldn't mind reading, we read through chapter 12, verse 23 yesterday, but let's read it again today and we'll pick up there.
Chapter 12, verse 23?
Yes. It begins with, then Yahweh will pass through.
Okay. Then Yahweh will pass through to plague the Egyptians. But when he sees the blood on the lintel of the door and on the two upright pillars of the door, Yahweh will pass over that doorway, and he will not allow the devastating destruction to come inside to plague your home.
Keep going.
So, you should choose to genuinely, completely, and carefully observe this message, because this is an engraved prescription for living on behalf of your children until eternity. And my people are completely destroyed and they will perish of a lack of understanding. Indeed, because you have totally avoided and rejected knowledge and understanding, so then I will consistently reject you and avoid you from serving as priests and ministers on my behalf, since you have continually ignored the Torah of your God. I also will consistently ignore your children.
Okay, you kind of went over from Exodus into the discussion on Hosea, which is in the chapter. So let's go step back a little bit and look at we discussed, you read through chapter 12, verse 24, which I read, because this is an engraved prescription for living on behalf of your children until eternity. You chalk, which was translated as engraved prescription for living, is based upon chakak, meaning instruction, which is inscribed, literally cut in stone. Both speak of providing the guidance required to be cut into the covenant relationship. That is the central message found in Yah's work. Passover is God's prescription for life. While we've shared the opening line of the following passage earlier, where Patty went ahead and jumped in and had already read through Hosea 4:6, which, you know, again, it bears repeating. It is just such a great verse that is so important. We're going to read it again. My people are completely destroyed, and they will perish. They are cut off and will cease to exist, because of a lack of understanding, belay, corrupted information, inadequate knowledge, and deficit in discernment. Indeed, because you have totally avoided and rejected ma'as, spurned and despised, literally refused and disdained knowledge and understanding, da'at, information and discernment. So then, I will consistently reject you and avoid you. I will actually disassociate from you and will rebuff from serving as priests and ministers, Kahan, from acting as counselors and clerics on my behalf. Since you have continually ignored Shaka, you have consistently overlooked and literally forgotten. You have lost sight of the significance of and responded inappropriately to the Torah of your God. I also will consistently ignore your children, Shakan Ben. I will overlook your son and forget about your children and view them as worthless. You know, this is a very damning verse for a lot of people, because we have this whole concept of ignorance is bliss in our culture. And, oh, I don't know, I don't care to know, and I'm happy in my little ignorant bubble. But that, knowledge and understanding, knowledge and understanding of what? Well, knowledge and understanding of Yahweh, knowledge and understanding of his Torah. Now, he tells us, you have ignored my Torah. And, for me, I don't like to judge people in terms of, oh, you don't know God, because, they may not. I don't like getting into that because it becomes a almost indefinable thing. And more to the point, though, what I look at is I do judge it in terms of how someone reacts to the truth. Yahweh just said, I am the way and the truth. So if someone rejects the truth, what does that mean? They're rejecting God. God is truth. Yah's Torah is the truth. And so when you reject that, you reject him. And at that point, I kind of do end up having to say, no, you don't know God.
By rejecting the Torah, they also reject Yahusha. I mean, because Yahusha was the Word made flesh, and what was the Word then was the Torah. So if you reject one, you reject the other.
Well, exactly. And, that's exactly what Hosea's saying here. Because you've rejected the Torah, because you, don't understand, don't know, and don't take the time to know, God's rejecting you because you rejected him. And, the part of this that it's really damning is the last part. I will ignore, cease to care about, and forget. Become oblivious to your children also. Parents' actions hurt their children. And a religious parent raises religious children, and their children are damned because their parents indoctrinated them. They brainwashed them into their religion. And so few who were raised in a religious home ever come out of that religion. It is a rare thing when someone is raised in a very religious home that they, leave it. It happens, thankfully, otherwise we would all be damned. But it's very rare. Go ahead.
Well, you might have just been saying that, but does that mean that, is there such a thing as, the age of reasoning? Have you ever heard that?
Well, there is a lot of in scripture which does speak of young children being declared right. One example that comes to mind is Lot and his family. Lot's family was spared along with him, even though it's clear from what the text that they were not righteous. You look at the text and Yah freed them and he tells them not to look back. What happens? His wife looks back. Then when you get out, the two daughters sit there. What do? They get their father drunk and have sex with him so that they can have kids. Obviously these are not people who are righteous, but they were spared because of their father. And there's a lot of scripture that shows that. And I tend to think, my understanding is, there is a point at which children, young children, are under their parents' umbrella. And much like this, the children are damned because of their parent. If two parents are religious and they have a, 2-year-old kid, well, that kid doesn't know Yah and most likely never will. And if something were to happen to that kid, that kid died apart from the covenant. That kid died apart from Yah, his life
was over.
That
makes sense. So, but obviously if you make that choice personally to follow Yah, then that's on your own. But it's kind of saying, I won't protect your kids because you don't know me.
The inverse, I think, would be true as well. If two parents who are participants in the covenant are raising a child to be a part of that covenant, and, by an accident or something happens at, age of 2 or 3 or, at that age where they're not really capable of understanding Yah's plan. And, they can kind of understand it. You can explain it to them, but they don't really understand it. But, I think that, yes, the same as, the condemnation of the parent would fall on the child, the blessing of the parent would fall on the child. I think, the child of members of the covenant family who are raising their child in the covenant who die would be considered part of that covenant because in all likelihood they would have grown up and chosen to participate in that covenant. So, I think, the inverse of Hosea 4:6 is just as true.
All right. That makes sense to me.
I said, yeah, I could be wrong, but to me, that just seems the most consistent with Yahweh's nature, the most consistent with what Yahweh has declared, the most consistent with what we see in Yahweh's word. So, yeah, it's the same thing you see a lot over and over. Now, there is an age when a child can reach a point and decide, you know, and I don't think it's like at age 12, they're now on their own, or at age 11, you know, just like I said, the age of accountability idea, well, in general, I think is true. There is an age when a child is capable of reasoning on their own, but that's different for everyone. Yeah, some children reach that at a very young age. Some children don't reach that until they're teens. Some children never reach that. You know, those who are born with mental difficulties and mental issues are never really able to reach that point. So, you know, it's different for everyone. There's no one age of accountability. But in general, there is this concept of an age of accountability where a child reaches a point where they are capable of making a choice and choose to make that choice. You know, dying until they reach that point where they outright choose to reject Yah, they will still be, you know, protected under their family's, you know, umbrella, so to speak. But as soon as they choose to leave that when that then,
right, that makes sense. Yeah.
There is no more responsible form of parenting than teaching your children to carefully observe the Torah of Yahweh. And that is why the final and fifth requirement of those wanting to participate in the covenant is for parents to help their children remember the Torah by circumcising their son. That way they will know and understand why it is important for them to accept Yahweh's invitation to attend Passover. And we'll continue with this after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before the break, we were discussing Hosea 4:6, and we got into talking about, you know, raising your children in the covenant. And, you know, I got to be thinking, yeah. You know, every parent wants to be able to give their children what they didn't have. At least any good parent, I would think. Me and Maddie have talked about that, and that's one of the reasons we've kind of put off having kids. We're trying to get to a point where we're not going to be quite so financially imbalanced that, you know, we can give our kids things that we didn't have as children. And, yeah, I was thinking about it, though. We're going to be able to give our kids something that we never had that is really the greatest thing in the world, which is to raise them as part of Yahweh's covenant. You know, I didn't have that. You were raised in a religious home, and, you know, you did study scripture and you did, you know, talk about the feast some, you know, you really didn't have the, you weren't really raised in the covenant either. So we're going to be able to give that to our children, which is kind of, you know, awesome, really, don't you think?
Oh, yes, I'm looking forward to that. Definitely part of the reason why I want to have kids. Although I don't know if I'm going to be able to be as consistent as Yah.
I don't think any of us are going to be that good of parents. I think we're going to make pretty good parents, but you know, I'm not perfect. I kind of wish I was. It'd be nice. One day I will be.
We have a good example to follow.
I think I told you that before. We'll make good parents. We've got a perfect example to follow. We got Yah's example, and we can follow that as best as we can. So, yeah, it'll be good. But it's just kind of awesome to know that, you know, our kids are going to be raised, you know, as part of Yah's family. They'll have a point where they'll get to choose whether or not they wish to continue in and enjoy it, but at least they'll have that from the beginning.
I'm definitely excited about that. Well, and especially with, the approach to this is kind of talks about several different religions and why they're wrong and also the right way, which, I mean, we wouldn't do with them when they're really young, but I always remember one of my science teachers, and she had twin boys, and she purposely raised them with no religion. She tried not to influence them in any way to make a decision. I mean, I think she was Christian, technically, or whatever, but she purposely tried not to. You know, she would give them information if they wanted it, and she tried to encourage that, but she didn't really
She didn't
really, like, you know, make them go into it. And there was a part of me that just respected that on the level of, being that support for them, but kind of letting them take their own journey to get to know God and figure it out and, you know, be open to the fact that maybe there were some wrong things in Christianity and to talk about it. But I think it's really important to be able to have that type of an open dialogue with your kids once they get to the right age to be able to say why some things are wrong or why we do it this way. And, you know, so encourage them to question it, because then, I mean, thankfully with this, it has a lot of the answers. So you don't have to be scared about them questioning it. It's not like questioning your faith. It's questioning, trying to understand Yah's Torah better.
Yeah, that's one of the things that my dad did that, you know, I am thankful for to this day, is my dad raised me to question everything, even him. You know, because I said so answer was never good enough for me. And he liked that. He would give me good explanation, good reasoned answers for what I would ask. And he encouraged me to, you know, question him, to look up things for myself, not just to take his word for it. And, yeah, that has benefited me through my entire life. You know, while I do plan on raising my kids in the covenant and teaching them Yah's word, I will be encouraging them to question everything I say, to look it up, to check it for themselves, to validate it.
To discuss it. And my dad was pretty good about that, but I think there was always kind of that underlying tone of, I don't know whether it was my parents or whether it was just being a part of Christianity, being in the church that I was in, there were just some things you didn't question. You just didn't question it. And so as a teenager, a lot of times I was scared to question things.
We'll talk about the whole faith and questioning aspect when we come back from the break, because that's really important to address. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we left for the break, we were talking about questioning and religion and faith and all of that. And, Patty was talking about how, you know, she questioned a lot of things in her religion, but at the same time, there were certain things that were kind of, almost like taboo, where you kind of didn't question it because, you know, it was uncomfortable. And, you know, really, it's kind of, I would say, the double-edged sword of Christianity is this faith concept. And, yeah, because you combine that with the heaven and hell thing, you know, if salvation, getting into heaven, is based upon faith, well, as soon as you start questioning faith, it's gone, because that's the nature of faith. You believe it. You don't question it. And so there's a fear among a lot of religious people to question anything about their faith, because they will be not going to heaven, and the consequence of not going to heaven is going to hell. And so it's that double-edged sword. It keeps people from thinking about it. And because of, out of fear of the torment of hell and all that. And, you know, like I said, just faith is that way where you can't question it. As soon as you question it, it's no longer faith.
And I think that Christians struggle with that a lot, because even like contemporary songs, a lot of the contemporary Christian songs that I listened to when I was a teenager, several artists had a song at least along that thread of, what do I do when they come at me with all this scientific knowledge and everything, and I feel my faith shaken? And so, you know, which was talking about then drawing closer towards your faith. But, you know, it's a hard thing for a lot of Christians, because they feel threatened, because when you start questioning that, well, that's just, it's not easy. It's uncomfortable. And if you question one thing, you have to question all of it. And then you might have to change entirely. And we're so brought up in that mindset that that's wrong, and that then you would be leaving God or something. So just most of the time they don't even want to go there.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, yeah, you talk about it, you know, if you question one thing and then, you know, you start questioning everything. You know, Yah told the story before of how he left Christianity, and it was all over one word. You know, when he realized one word was, the translation was so bad that the way it was translated could not be true, and that was the word Asher. Was translated in, in 2 Samuel, as when he sins, I will not spare the rod. Well, it's speaking of the Masiyah, and if the Masiyah sinned, then he was in the perfect land, and therefore couldn't have been the Passover sacrifice. So, you know, if he sinned, which this, the English translations were saying he did, then it was all, everything fell apart. And so I came to find out that, you know, Asher means is a relational term. So when sin is associated with him, then I will not spare the rod. So it's not him sinning, it's our sin being associated with him. But it became, you know, it was that slippery slope. You know, once he realized that, it was like, okay, well, what else is wrong? And then one thing led to another, and you have to end up rejecting all of Christianity. And, yeah, I think a lot of people fear that, you know, that drastic of a change.
Well, I mean, and it also gets into it's that whole group mentality of they're in that in-group of being a Christian. And so to leave that group, to go on this out-group of saying that that's wrong is scary to them. I mean, because they will just sit there and reaffirm what they believe and draw the line and make the other group look bad. And that's just, yeah, it's just very much human nature. That's just what we do.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of people talk about their time in Christianity, and now looking back on it, like, you know, we get together every Sunday in church, and we pretend together. And we all pretended so much that it became real to us. And that's really what, you know, faith is. We all get together, we reaffirm ourselves, and, you know, we know we're right because, you know, that's why Christians are so upset when anyone contradicts them. That's why, you know, they get so upset when, you know, they say that, you know, teachers can't lead prayers in school. Is, oh, they might get an alternative view, and what am I going to do then? And, you know, it's a fear-based thing.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, like I said, that's just, when you get away from that and you realize, that, that's why I love looking at the example of Abram and Yahweh, their relationship. And Abram wasn't afraid to question Yah, to challenge him. Yeah, you know, Yah wants us to question him. We should not be afraid to question. Question is, what, go ahead.
You look at that. Abraham wasn't afraid to question him. Then Moshe wasn't afraid to tell him no. I don't think you got the right person. But I don't think I can do this.
Exactly. Yeah, Yah wants us to be in that. Yeah, the way I look at it, and this is how I've always looked at things, if I question, but questioning what, or, you know, when someone challenges me on something, I embrace that because there's two possibilities that come from it. Either they challenge me and I'm right, in which case I spend some time doing more research, reaffirming my position, defending it, learning to articulate it better, possibly convincing them, although that's very rare. So I'm either end up in the same place, only stronger in my position, or I'm wrong. And I want to know if I'm wrong. I don't want to go through life with an errant view. If I'm wrong, I embrace finding out when I'm wrong. But I'm just, you know, my thing goes back to, you got to prove me wrong. And if you can prove that I am wrong, I have no issue with admitting I'm wrong. And to me, that's the only thing to think about is, you know, what is going to better your life? To continue being in an errant position because it's comfortable? Or to learn the truth and embrace the truth. You know?
Well, and the thing is that it's really rewarding once you learn the truth and you embrace it, but it's also very scary. It's really hard. I mean, like, for me, it was really hard because being a Christian was so much a part of my identity. I mean, that was really how I defined myself. And so to go through changing all of that was very fundamental change in me going on. So, I mean, I get why that's hard for people.
Yeah.
Certainly some people. Especially if you aren't prone to study or read scripture very much anyways, which is a lot of our society doesn't really want to invest that time reading or studying or getting to know more, looking at things from a different perspective. They would rather just have the easy way out and then, you know, maybe a couple of feel good things and maybe some good stories and other stuff, but they don't want to have to actually study.
Well, yeah, it goes back to that whole faith thing and, you know, okay, I believe Jesus died for my sins, I'm saved, good, let's go party. Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm a bit lucky. Yeah, it's benefit and a curse coming from where I came from in my perspective was, for me, coming to know Yah and embracing the covenant and the Torah was much more organic. It was a growth from where I was. Whereas, I think for Christians, it's a much more abrupt change. you know, for me, it was a slow metamorphosis of slowly incorporating this in and working on it. Whereas with Christians, you have, you know, you come from that perspective, you have to be able to reject a lot of what you've known and what you thought was true and then embrace the truth and then incorporate that in. So it's a lot more
rough. And it's not even just Christians. It's coming from any religion.
Well, yeah. Christians more common. I know a handful of people who came from Judaism and a handful of, actually, I don't know anyone who's came from Islam, but, you know, it's much more Christians as far as religions go that come to know Yah through the Torah.
The thing that's really hard with Christianity, too, is that so much of it is so close to the truth. It's really hard to catch just, you know, the very significant bit that is not.
Oh, exactly. It's just for me, now at the same time, it's a bit of a deficit because I have a hard time. I don't have quite as hard time as I used to because I've talked with you so much about this. And, you know, as we were dating and even early in our marriage, this was probably the most frequent topic of conversation. Yeah, I can understand the Christian perspective a little better now. But because I didn't come from that, I don't really understand it as well. And I'm not able to engage with Christians as well as, you know, you would be, or even Yada.
I don't even know. I think Yada does splendidly good. Larry, too. I try, but I have a hard time because I want to pull the Bible out and even just use a regular translation because, I mean, it's still there and just read that and be like, look, it says it right here. Why can't you see that? Can't I just read that to you and you can get it? But apparently that gets Bibles thrown at me, so that doesn't work well.
Yeah. But when you come from that, like I said, there's a benefit and deficit coming from each perspective. But coming from a religious perspective, you have to unlearn a lot. It's an abrupt change, and you got to really change a lot about your life. But, like I said, then you're in a better position to understand. You can understand when you present something to a Christian why they reject it more so than I do. To me, I'm just like, well, this is clear as day. How can you reject this? Although I think tend to be sometimes people coming from the Christian perspective get a bit angry at first, realizing they were lied to, and then they're almost a bit too aggressive when dealing with other Christians. So, you know, there's all that to it as well. You know, when you find out you've been lied to your whole life, it tends to kind of put you on edge. But going back to something I was going to talk about, I tried to bring it up, and then we got going on something else, but I wanted to, you know, there's something important to us. Yeah, I really consider myself blessed in two ways that a lot of people I know don't have, and I really, you know, I feel so bad for them because they don't. And one is I can share Yah with my spouse. You know, we love to engage and discuss Yah's word, to study the Torah together. Yeah, like I said, it's our favorite topic of conversation. But I know so many people who have embraced the covenant and their, you know, spouse hasn't. You know, they're either on edge about it, they're interested but not real interested, or outright rejected. And you know, I feel so bad for them. I wish I could help them, and I just can't imagine what that would be like. Because I know when I'm studying scripture and I come across something interesting, the first person I want to tell is you. You know, you
yeah.
Come running out of the bedroom like, hey, check out what I just read.
It's very enjoyable. It's one thing I regret about school is that I really enjoyed the Saturdays we get to spend where I would be studying something and you would, and we share with each other.
Yeah. I'll talk about the second area where I felt very blessed when we come back from the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before the break, I was talking about how there are two areas in my life that I feel extremely blessed. And the first was that I have a spouse who I can share the covenant and my relationship with Yah with, and we can engage together. And how I know so many people who are in positions where they don't have that, and you know, it's just, and I see how hard it is on them. And the other is another area, same thing, where I see the people that don't have this, and it is very hard on them, and it's almost, I'd say almost worse. I think a lot of them take it a lot harder, and that is, I'm going to be able to raise my child in the covenant. You know, we were talking about that earlier, and I'm going to be able to raise my kid to know Yah. And Yeah, I know people now who have left their religion with their children, and they're teaching their children that, and they get that benefit, and they're loving it. But I also know several people who, you know, came to know Yah very late in life and had already raised their children, and they're now struggling with their children who are very religious. You know, I know a guy whose son's a minister, and he's argues with them all the time on this, and he feels bad that, you know, when he really had the chance to affect that change, he was wrong. And, you know, it's not his fault. You know, he came to know Yah. He embraced it when the evidence was there. He just didn't have it at the time. But not being able to raise your kid with that, having raised your kid in religion and having to deal with that, I mean, my heart goes out to him. I really don't know that I could handle that. And I can see how that would be so hard on you. And so I consider myself very blessed that, you know, I am going to be able to share the Torah with my kids. I'm going to be able to celebrate Passover with my kids to teach them what it means. You know, to me, that's just, it's a great thing. And, you know, I'm the type of person, I tend to learn a lot more, not just from reading. You know, I'm an auditory learner. I'm a visual learner. I can learn through reading. I can learn through listening. But what I find I learn the most is through teaching and explaining something, which is why I love, you know, one of the reasons I got so engaged in the forum was at first it was all about, I had questions, you know, and the things that I wasn't quite understanding, and I would post these questions. But, you know, as years went on and I started grasping more and more, I started not being the one asking questions, but the one trying to help answer questions that people are asking. And for me, it's just helped me understand myself better and where my position is and understand scripture better. Because through explaining it, through teaching it to others, it really sinks in and helps me understand it more. And so I imagine the same thing's going to be there when I'm teaching my kids. I'm going to be teaching them these things, and things are going to click that I'd missed before. And I look forward to that, you know, having that aha moment with my son right by me. And be able to go, oh, you know, Daddy missed that before, but look. My wife be there with me, and I, like I said, I look so forward to that, and I consider myself very blessed that my children are going to be able to grow up like this.
Yes.
The fear is that they will then end up rejecting it for whatever reason.
That scares me. That would be really hard.
I know I got a good friend who's kind of running into that with one of his children right now in terms of, you know, he left religion and, you know, took his kids with him. And has been trying to teach them Yah's Torah and covenant. And one of them, who is in the teen years, has got into that, you know, teenage rebellious period, and is kind of, you know, I think the thing with them is that she's upset on the whole end of the world so soon type thing. And because of that, is kind of rejected, at least for the time being, the covenant. Doesn't want to have anything to do with it right now. And I've seen how that's, you know, affected him.
Well, that can be a really hard thing to deal with when you're a teenager.
Yeah. And like I said, yeah, I'm thinking it's probably just going to be the rebellious teen period, and there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah,
hopefully she'll come around and reason will win out in the end. Anyways, I think we went off on a bit of a tangent there for a while, but and it was a discussion I was enjoying, so I don't mind that. But if you're ready, we should probably get back to discussing Exodus, unless you had anything else you wanted to add, Patty.
Oh, we're good. So we can get back to that when we get back.
Yep. When we return from the break, we'll return to Exodus chapter 12, verse 25.